Working Cows Podcast, episode 107.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. And today's episode is brought to you by Beefmasters. For more information on incorporating Beefmasters genetics into your herd, check out beefmasters.org. Really excited today about an episode with Ricky Kramers. She is really knowledgeable and really good businesswoman in the ranching industry. And I'm really excited about a discussion with her about getting started with instinctive migratory grazing. Ricky, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast.
Hi, Clay. It's good to be here.
I've had a few requests from members of my private Facebook group and others to cover the topic of instinctive migratory grazing from a boots on the ground perspective. And we've talked to Bob Kinford about it a few times on different episodes. They'll be linked in the show notes page for today, which is workingcows.net/107. But I also wanted to talk to somebody who's kind of gone through the process of using the practice and see what they had to say about it. So I guess the first question for me would be if you could share a little bit of your resource base, kind of the rainfall that you're dealing with, the type of range that you're dealing with, kind of the country that you're in.
Okay. We're in about like a 12 to 15 inch annual precipitation, which doesn't always come as rainfall being in Wyoming. A good share of that sometimes comes as spring snows, which isn't always utilizable, but we'll take what we can get. We are rangeland, so we're primarily sage and wheat grasses, all dry land, with the exception of, I think, about 200 acres that are sub-irrigated where a creek actually runs underneath of us as it passes through. Let's see, what else did you want to know?
That's good. Kind of just the resource base, the kind of land and grass and moisture you're dealing with. Yeah, that's good point. Not all of it is in rain.
I'll add to that. So we are 8,000 acres, and we're 35 to 40 acres to the cow. So essentially, according to regional stocking rates, we are a 200 cow outfit.
Okay.
And that's with winter. That usually includes winter feeding as well.
Being able to raise enough forage to feed them through the winter, whether that's rolled up as hay or whatever, that's 30 to 40 acres per cow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that usually includes supplemental feeding. So whether you put your own hay up or you buy hay in, those 40 acres to the cow are included into that, I guess.
Sure. Yep. So what was your motivation for getting started with instinctive migratory grazing?
Well, we kind of been on the path of trying to figure out how to increase our land base for almost 10 years now. And what it came down to was we realized that a 200 cow outfit really wasn't going to pay the bills, pay the mortgage. We bought the family ranch. And so we had to pay the mortgage. We had to pay our bills. We had to live. And 200 cows was pretty tight to do that on. And so we were trying to figure out ways to increase our land base and leasing ground. We were able to pick up a few temporary leases, 1 to 2 years here and there before the place sold. And then the ranches that were around us that were for sale, at the time they were for sale, we couldn't afford financially to go ahead and act on those. And so we had to let them go. And so we started really studying what we could do with our own property to increase our land base. And so we kind of started on a journey of how can we increase our forage, how density, quality, quantity, all of that kind of stuff, and then ultimately increase our cow numbers so that we're basically running on an additional ranch without any purchase of extra land. So that's kind of how we started down this. And through that 10-year period, we saw some decreases or I guess you'd call it increases in the decreases in the number of acres per cow that we were able to run.
Right. Increase in carrying capacity.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. You know, like I said, we were 35 to 40 acres to the cow, and that was in 07 when we kind of started on this journey. By 11, we were at 33 acres to the cow. By 13, we were 24 acres to the cow. By 2016, we were 22 acres to the cow. So we were gaining, but we just felt like there was more we could do because we weren't even quite yet to doubling our carrying capacity with the changes that we were making. And that's when we ran into Bob Kinford via social media. Okay. And he started talking to us about herding and the things that we could do with that. So that's how we kind of came to that path.
And what were some of the things that were involved in the transition as far as your process of transitioning to using this this technology, this method, instinctive migratory grazing? I think we'll switch to IMG or whatever you're comfortable with for the rest of the episode. But what were some of the things that you, how did you go about making the transition?
The biggest transition we had to make was in our stockmanship and how we approached our cattle and how we handled our cattle. And when we changed our stockmanship and started handling our cattle differently, moving them, asking them to move from the front instead of driving them places, they started to respond in ways that we never even fathomed could happen. Mm. Not only did they start handling better, but they started grazing differently. So that's really the only changes that we've made to our entire operation is just changing our stockmanship. Mm. We still have the same pastures, the same water system. We have a pretty good water system. We have like 20 miles of pipeline and about 24 drinking points. We have 21 permanent fenced pastures that we didn't alter at all in order to do the migratory grazing.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much there was no outlay of cost other than we brought Bob Kinford in to work specifically with us in a five-day workshop to fine-tune what we had been doing for the summer.
Mm.
And that was in 2018. Yeah, a year ago we brought him in. Fine-tune everything. So that's really been our only expense in this whole journey.
Hmm. Wow. Cool. And so when you talk about starting them from the front, you are talking about anytime you're working with them, this is the way you guys approach cattle? Or are you talking about just in the pasture when you're wanting to kind of muster and move or gather up and move? How does that look?
So it's pretty much anytime that we work these cattle now, and it's actually carried over into any time that we work cattle, we try to approach them from the front. It seems that our horse maybe works as a translator. And when we approach them from the front and use our horse's body language, we can get them to walk right on by us in the pasture. If we don't change our horse's body language, we can actually walk through them and they'll just stand still and let us mingle in around them. So there's a lot to it, but we always do approach them from the front instead of pushing from behind.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I know the first time I had Bob on and he was talking about this kind of idea of starting them from the front, I'm pretty sure it went over my head and then started to notice it while I was out in the pasture. And then the second time I talked to him, I was like, oh yeah, this is starting to make a lot more sense. So could you break that down just a little bit more? I know starting from the front seems to be self-explanatory and easy to understand, but could you just talk about approaching a set of cattle in the pasture and some of the issues with body language of the horse and how you would go about making sure that you're approaching them in a low-stress way?
Pretty much what we do when we approach cattle is we don't approach them head-on, as in directly in line with them. We kind of take an angle at them and I kind of maybe picked out their shoulder to ride towards and ask my horse then to two-track also towards them. So I'm kind of moving on a lateral feel as I go by them instead of being straight parallel with them.
Mm-hmm.
I also ask my horse to flex their head the direction that I want them to go.
Mm.
And just that head flexion and that lateral movement as I go by them is enough to communicate with them which direction to go. It's really hard to explain without being able to demonstrate it.
Sure. I think I'm kind of grasping what you're saying a little bit, but yeah, I think it does take seeing it and feeling it to really understand what is going on there. How much time and work goes into herd maintenance to keep them, quote unquote, rebooted, as Bob would say?
You know, not as much as a person would think, because when we first started on this in 2018, and even currently, we're day working about 180 days a year, and so we're not out with our cows a lot. And it was amazing how fast they picked it up. Like, we were, when we first started, maybe once every 2 or 3 days we were able to get out there. We could very seldom could we string consecutive days together. And so we just made the concerted effort that every time we worked them, we used these techniques. And it didn't take maybe a month but not consecutive days, not even, it was mostly the month of April, and we kind of had things going. And then when Bob was here for like 3 days, it didn't, you know, our cows picked right up on it. And he says 5 days and you can have them pretty much trained if you can get 5 consecutive days together. And I would be, if the conditions were right and favorable to the herd, I wouldn't doubt that in a bit. If you have a challenging terrain or challenging circumstances, it can tend to work against you a little bit. But overall, I mean, I would say in 2 weeks' time for sure, if a person did that day in and day out and paid attention to how they were working their cows, it would come together real easy. And then as far as maintenance, like I say, it's just every time that we move them, which this year has been a lot more because we've actually expanded upon the idea of IMG and put it into more of a rotational system. I can get into that in a little bit.
Sure.
But just every time we move them now, we're very conscientious of how we approach them, how we move through them, how we ask them to move out, and then when we stop them to graze.
Sure. You mentioned
reinforces it.
Yeah, that's really cool. You mentioned earlier that you have seen them start grazing differently as a result of IMG. Can you talk about what you meant by that and how they are grazing differently?
Sure. That's probably been the most unique thing to have seen. Typically, in the past, and most herds that I've seen also, the cows seek out the sweet spots they really like, and they go to those areas and they graze them down into the ground. If you give them the opportunity, they'll graze them down into the ground before they ever move on to find something else. And what we started noticing with our cows as we started rebooting their herd instinct is they were no longer seeking out those sweet spots, but rather as a herd, they'd move through an area and they would take like the top third to the half of a plant with one bite and move on. And so after the whole herd had gone through an area, it looked like it had been mechanically mowed to the same residual plant height. And usually that residual plant height was anywhere from 4 to 6 inches. So that was pretty crazy to see the first time, because we're like, what in the world? And then we got to watching more and more, and we're like, oh my goodness, they have just completely went through this field and bit off every plant at the same height.
Yeah, so that was like, regardless that of was species, they just kind of mowed the whole thing off, whether no matter what it was, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, not so much, because a lot of our, you know, like where we were really noticing that was in western wheat, and it would be, you know, like this time of year, you'd see the western wheat, a patch of western wheat that they'd gone through, which might be fairly good sized, you know.
Sure.
And then they might go down through some Canadian thistle. They would do that with it. And then our sub-irrigated meadows, I'm not sure what all grass species, I'm drawing a blank on all the grass species we have down there, but they would do the same with those meadows.
Sure.
But it wasn't as if there was a lot of interspecies mixed into things that they were grazing. You know, they were gotcha. Certainly selecting plants. But that leads me to what we've observed this year, is that there really are certain plants at certain times of the year that have the nutrients that they need at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've watched them this year go through the sweet clover and then go through some western wheat and then come back through and pick up some grandmas and some buffalo grass. And they're just they're pretty selective, but like this year we've done a lot more rotational stuff. So we've grazed some of our pastures 4 times, and each time they're selecting something different. The other grasses are coming back, but they at that time don't care for those other grasses, and they're just selecting something that's more in line with what their nutritional needs are at the time, I guess you'd say. It might be forbs, it might be grasses, could be some shrubs.
Have you added animals to this since you started?
Yeah.
And
we have.
Do they need trained, or do they fall into the herd and kind of pick up, or do you have to spend some time?
Yeah, do a little training on them. I bought 60 head of cows, just run-of-the-mill sale barn cows out of random lots, and so there were, you know, maybe 2 or 3 that ever came from the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And we put those in the herd starting in January and just kind of trickled them in all through the spring then. And some of those, you kind of watch them, and their background maybe wasn't the most favorable as far as stockmanship, because they'd want to quit the herd and they would take off and hide and things like that. And so, yeah, we had to train them to the system. We had to reboot their herd instincts. But it didn't take long. I mean, it took probably 10 rides on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to figure out that the herd was not a bad place to be, and that the herd migrates to new feed, and the herd has protection to it. Hmm. So it does take some training on new cattle to assimilate them to the herd.
Ricky, just a quick break. We're going to talk to Lorenzo Lassiter about the Beefmasters genetics. And Lorenzo, I'd just like you to talk a little bit about some of the problems that Beefmaster genetics are solving for cow-calf producers.
In all honesty, Clay, somewhere along the way, somebody forgot that success in the cattle business starts with 3 things, fertility, adaptability, and longevity. If someone's cows won't breed back, or structural problems, feet and legs, or longevity cause them to wash out too early, I think people ought to consider Beefmaster females, because they bring a lot of solutions to the table for that. They're ready to go to work for you, they give everything they have, and rebuild your cow herd so that your future is built on core fundamentals and not passing fancies.
I really appreciate that answer. Could you share a little bit about how Beefmaster's philosophy and principles are keeping them focused?
When Tom Lassiter developed the breed, over the course of that development, there were 5 of essentials, then became 6. And he realized that there were only 6 traits that went into the economically productive production of beef cattle. And those 6 essentials are weight, conformation, milk production, fertility, hardiness, and disposition. So in the 80 years since he developed those ideas, people have tried to add to them or subtract from them or change them. And really, when you get down to it, they're still as accurate and on point as they were today. If your goal is to efficiently raise quality beef cattle in a grass-based environment.
Well, everybody, if you're looking for a Beefmaster genetics from a breed that is focused on these 6 essentials, you can go to beefmasters.org to find out more information about how you can incorporate them into your herd. Ricky, you mentioned a couple of times that you guys have paired this with some more rotational grazing. Can you define what you mean by that? I think a lot of times people talk about those things, and some people hear one thing and the person talking might mean something else. So can you define what you mean by rotational?
Right. So what we've done now is, in the past, well, last year, we would stay in a pasture until we thought they had grazed everything till, you know, one bite. Mm-hmm. And so that might be some pastures, it might take a week or two, and then in other pastures, it might take a month to get all the way through. But this year, what we started doing is we used our existing permanent fences and our pastures. And we actually upped the intensity on it. We cut our place in half and are only using half of our ranch. And so that gave us 9 existing pastures on the half that we're in. And now we have a formula that we go by that dictates how long we stay in a pasture based on the pasture's size in comparison to the total area that we want to graze. So like a 70-acre pasture, we might only graze for a day. But a 925-acre pasture, we might stay in for 5 days if we're wanting to do real fast rotations.
Mm-hmm.
Or we might be 10 days in the bigger pasture and 2 days in the smaller pasture if we're wanting to do slower rotations. What that has done is it has increased the intensity on our ranges, but not in a way that is damaging to it. And through the migratory effect of our herd, we can graze those 925-acre pastures the same way that they graze a 70-acre pasture.
Hmm. Well, and that's without adding infrastructure.
Right, right. Yep, that was just using our existing infrastructure and just putting it more into a formulated plan.
Sure. And so that kind of answers this question, I think, but if you want to add more to it, you can. Can it be combined with seasonal or intensive systems?
I think most definitely. Because that's what we've done is we just took an intensive system and integrated the migratory stuff into it so we didn't have to chop up our 925-acre pastures.
Yeah.
Basically, there are 10 to 12 smaller unfenced pastures within there that they migrate and graze.
And
if that makes sense.
The unfenced pasture, I mean, the thing that's limiting them in moving in those quote-unquote unfenced pastures is the herd instinct. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Huh.
Yep. And they're as a herd, they're seeking out what they need and only staying in the area for as long as as long as they can get what they need out of the plant.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not trying to hold them on, say, 30 acres for a day when it could only sustain them for an hour. They're moving, you know, right through that area, picking up what they need and moving on. And we are kind of an arid, brittle range, and so we can't spend a lot of time in one place.
Right. And I had a follow-up question earlier when we were talking about adding new cattle to the system. You said that it took 10 days or so. If those days were more in succession or more closer together, would it have been faster, do you think, or just the nature of adding a few cows in, it's going to take some time?
I think just kind of the nature of adding those new cows in and just the fact that they had to become accustomed to us and figure out, you know, because there were times when we had to go get them out of hiding because they'd go seek out the cedar trees.
Sure.
And just ease them back out of there and, you know, move them with the herd. And the next time, maybe they wouldn't go as far.
Yep.
So it just took time. I'm sure maybe if we had strung consecutive days together, it might not have taken as long. But it's hard to say with the new cows.
Sure. And how large or small of a herd do you think is necessary?
I think it can work with just about any numbers that you can herd. Right now, my nephews, they're running 50 head. They're trying to do the same fashion. And it will work if they could stay with it a little bit better. I don't know if they got their cattle entirely trained. But, I mean, they're grazing just some smaller pastures that we have with 50 head. And when they get it set up and going, it works. And then they just don't seem to, I don't know, check back in with them and keep them going or whatever.
Sure.
But we are, right now, we've thrown our yearling heifers in with our cow-calf pairs. And so we're up to 350. I've heard of several thousand head being in the same system.
Yep.
It certainly makes it easier to handle them. Right now, one of us can go out and move the entire herd, and it doesn't matter if we just make a pasture change through a gate or if we go 2 or 3 miles, like some of our pasture changes dictate.
Hmm. Wow.
Still just one person moving them.
That's awesome. What condition does the range need to be in to start this type of program?
You know, I don't know that there's any set condition because the cattle are grazing the condition that it is. So the healthier your range is, the more that they're going to be able to positively impact that in the immediate future, I guess you'd say. And the poorer condition that your range is, you're going to see impact, but it's going to take a longer time for to see that positive impact.
Sure. And how much land do you think is required? Is it kind of the same answer to the herd size? You could do it with just about any size, I mean, within reason?
Yeah, I think you could. I think there's some guys in Kansas that were grazing, I don't know, several hundred head of yearlings on like a 360 or something like that.
Hmm.
So, I mean, not very big.
Right.
As long as they can migrate around it.
Hmm. Cool. Could you talk a little bit about changes in the grass since you guys started this?
Yep. So we've seen a definite increase in the grass density. I do some range monitoring, and those numbers have been kind of fun to look at. We've seen in the last 10 years, but primarily just in the last 2 years, that the major changes have come about. We see an 80% decrease in annual plants. Our biggest annual plant decreaser being cheatgrass, which in some people's opinion is really, really good, but then we are year-round grazers, and so we kind of like to see the cheatgrass in the early spring.
Right.
But because of being year-round grazers, it's definitely making an impact on it. We've seen a 60% increase in the perennial plants. So as the cheatgrass is decreasing, we're starting to see more western wheat come in those places. In the last 2 years, we've seen a huge increase, like 300% increase in the amount of forbs that we have. The biggest increasing forb would be wild alfalfa. It's kind of cropping up everywhere, and this time of year, our cows are hitting it pretty hard. We've seen a 66% decrease in the amount of bare ground, so we're getting a lot more ground cover, and then a 22% increase in grass density. Those are kind of fun numbers to look at.
Sure. And then, so that's just since starting IMG?
No, actually since 07, but the biggest share of those changes came since starting IMG.
Wow.
Like, we were gradually working along, but you could see the numbers jump.
Right. You think that the improvement has been like almost exponentially faster since starting IMG?
Yes.
Huh.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Can you tell me a little bit about your ranch before starting, kind of infrastructure, water? I mean, all the way back to pre-07, was there, what kind of management had it been under? What kind of infrastructure was there? Some of those things.
So prior to 07, when my husband and I bought the ranch for his family, when it was under the management of his parents, it was watered with windmills and stock ponds. In 05, my husband Justin started putting in some pipeline projects on the half that he was leasing from his family at the time. And then in 07, we finished those pipeline projects after we had purchased the place. Management-wise, when the folks had it, there basically was a 4,000-acre summer range and a 4,000-acre winter range, and they didn't cross over, like, year after year after year. They were the same winter range, same summer range. Continuous grazing of the pastures. You know, you'd graze one out for however long it would last and move on to the next one. So they never got a rest recovery period other than the, you know, the dormant winter pastures season. Rested all summer and the summer pastures rested all winter. Let's see, there was, there must have been about 14 permanent pastures, I think. And then so we put in some cross fences here by the house, which gave us four more pastures. And then we took and split two of our biggest pastures in about half. And so it left us, I think we have 21 pastures now that we could, on the whole place, that we could rotate through if we wanted to.
And here's the million-dollar question, which means it's entirely theoretical and probably impossible to know. But do you think that you could have got by with less infrastructure if you had started IMG in 07?
You know, looking back on things, I think we could have, or we would change the infrastructure that we currently have. Because a lot of our pastures have a couple of water tanks in them, but they're not so big that the cows can't cover the entire pasture and get back to a water tank. And so we could possibly take out the number of watering points that we have. The other thing is the way we would install the watering points is we would make them have either more volume or more pressure. Because as we've increased our cow numbers this year, we have one system in particular that we're on right, or we were just on, that didn't have enough volume and didn't have enough pressure to water that many cattle at one time. Because the way migratory grazing works is they migrate in to water and then they migrate back out and ruminate and graze as a herd, and then they come back into water as a herd. So you need to have ample water in place for them to be able to drink when the herd comes in. The other problem we ran into this spring was having too much water because we had a lot of stock ponds fill up and just general little low spots had water in them. And so while we were working with them this spring, especially with the new cows and stuff, we'd bring them all together and we'd have them together for a day, maybe two. And then we'd go back out and they'd be all split up again into like seven groups. And when you went to count the water locations, there were 7 water locations in that pasture.
For sure. So I asked Graham Reese on episode 105 if he thought herding was the future in the United States, and he said he didn't think people were willing to do the work. And I mean, you used the word herding earlier, and I think that's kind of what we're talking about here today. Do you think that it's an option or something that people should consider?
You know, no more effort than we actually put into it. I think it really is something people should consider, especially where you can implement it, or, you know, kind of dovetail it right into a already planned system without adding any infrastructure. And all it takes is rebooting the herd instinct, and then, you know, the cows are herding themselves. We basically look at the cows as our employees, and they're doing the work for us.
Working cows, I like to hear it.
Right.
So, I really appreciate your time today. Anything else you want to share today? Anything else about this IMG that you're excited about? Or what about the future?
Yeah.
Some things that you're looking forward to?
Yeah. I do have some things. So some of the cool things that we saw is in 2018, we actually, through the IMG, we dropped to 18 acres to the cow.
Hmm.
So, and now this year, since we've tightened up the intensity, we're on track to be 12 and a half acres to the cow for year-round grazing with no supplementation.
Hmm. Wow.
So basically, we've now tripled our ranch.
That's
so
awesome.
We're pretty excited about that.
Yeah. And are you thinking about increasing the herd size or bringing in outside cattle? What are you?
So, you know, I mentioned that we'd split our ranch in half, and that other half gives us insurance. So,
right.
I say right now we're on track. If we have way overestimated this, we have the insurance of the grass on the other half of the ranch to be able to utilize to finish out the winter. We're pretty confident, though, in what we have, and so we actually are bringing in some outside cattle to lease winter ground to for this year. And then next year, we're actually entertaining the thought of not only increasing our cow-calf herd on this side, but possibly bringing in yearlings to graze the other side in the same fashion.
Hmm.
And then having them out in September to leave enough residual grass for winter insurance.
And you're confident enough in the ease of starting a herd that outside yearlings, you're not worried about them being able to pick the system up and fit right in?
Right. Yearlings are really fun to work in the system because they're so sensitive. And, I mean, they just kind of mold right into it. So.
Hmm. Hmm. Cool. Yeah, it's exciting stuff. And I'd love to, like I said, maybe make this into a little bit of a documentary and track your progress as you continue with it. It's fascinating stuff, and I'm excited for the progress you guys have made and for the future of your operation.
Thank you. We're excited too. We just keep looking for possibilities. So.
Cool. Well, anything else we missed or anything you want to share about how people can keep up with what you guys are doing?
I don't think so, because I don't have a place that I really publicly share a lot of that stuff. So
okay.
Just hit and miss if you catch it on my wall by chance. And I don't friend everybody. So
yeah, sounds good. Well, really appreciate your time and fascinating stuff. So thank you.
All right. Thanks, Clay.
Fantastic stuff there with Ricky. Just really appreciate her having the numbers and knowing what difference their decisions are making to their grass. Really, ultimately, that's what it comes down to. And so really appreciate that opportunity to sit down with her, and really looking forward to the future of the Working Cows podcast coming up next week. We're going to sit down with David Kleinschmidt of Understanding Ag LLC. He is a contract consultant with them. We're going to talk to him about improving pastures with cover crops. So really look forward to that, and hope you'll tune in next week for another episode of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.